Special good evening to you once again. I'm Greg Stanisili, and we have for you the host of the Better Health Radio Show, as per usual, Dr. Renee Boyce, and she will introduce her guest this evening. So let's say a very special good evening to Dr. Boyce. Good evening, Doc. Doc, it would help if you unmute your mic.
I did.
Okay, there we go.
Right, I just pressed the wrong button at the wrong time. Right, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. As usual, we have a packed show for you, lots of educational information on a very relevant topic, I think, and we have two very knowledgeable guests this evening. But let me just say a special good evening to you, Gretchen. It's been a week since I saw you, so I'm saying hello.
Oh, that's so sweet of you. Just a week?
Yeah, only a week.
Ah, right. Okay. We have to make sure. You see, they're trying to keep us apart, but
we are
going to conquer this. Just give it time.
I hear you. You better stay on that limb by yourself, but let's rush on to what we have planned for you this evening. We are going to be talking all about blood donation, blood collecting, blood transfusions, and whatever else we can cover as relates to that branch of medicine called transfusion medicine, as much as we can. Because if you would cast your mind back with me, about 2 weeks ago, we had Dr. Laurent on, and we had a whole show planned, and nothing that we had planned came to pass.
Careful, that might happen this evening as well too, so you better be careful.
Don't call it. So let me introduce my first guest. You'll hear a little bit more about Dr. Laurent later on. I want to introduce to you Ms. Anderlene Seely. She is a senior blood collecting technician at the Blood Collecting Center. I'm being very guarded with my words, and you'll understand why in a moment. Hi, good evening, Ms. Seely, and welcome.
Good evening to everyone.
Yes, I worked with Ms. Seely and Dr. Laurent, as you know, a couple years ago, and she's a very hardworking woman at the Blood Collection Center. So you're going to hit the ground rolling, Ms. Seely. A very simple question to start off. Where exactly is Blood Collecting Center?
We're located on Lady Mead Gardens, next door to Winston Scott Polyclinic.
Okay, and in your department, how many members of staff do you have?
There are five of us, actually. Four technicians and one departmental aide.
Okay, so there are so many questions people might have in their minds as pertains to the actual process about what goes on when you have to donate blood. Even before we get into that, I want to ask you, what are some of the excuses that you might have heard from persons who... I see Grace still laughing. Have you ever donated blood?
Yes, I think twice I did. Twice.
Oh, congratulations to you. Oh, and that reminds me of a disclaimer that I need to issue. This is a branch of medicine. As with many of the branches of medicine, there are issues that persons might consider ethical. I know that Gregson will well remember the show that we had sometime, I believe it was last year, where we were discussing my attempt to donate blood, and we were taken to task by a gentleman
who did not think
that it was something that should be done. So I issue a disclaimer saying that this is a branch of medicine we're discussing. It's a show about medical topics. We are not here to try to sway people from their religious, personal, financial, social, political views. It is just for the purpose of education. And those persons who want to hear the information, continue to listen. Give us a call, 434-1790, WhatsApp, 266-4862. So back to you now, Ms. Seely. We want to walk individuals through that process, but what are some of the excuses that you've heard?
I'm afraid of needles. Nobody has ever asked me. That's usually the two.
Those are the major ones?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm afraid of needles and nobody's ever asked me. So we want to walk persons through the process. You have whatever reason to donate blood. Perhaps an ill relative is in hospital and they're asking for blood or blood products. or perhaps you've heard the call for making a donation to Blood Collecting Center, and you've decided that you want to give blood. So you arrive at the center there in Lady Mead Gardens next to the Winston Scott Polyclinic. Take us from there. What's the next step? What can persons expect?
Basically, there are three steps to the donation process. We first have to do a screening on you, which takes the form of an interview, medical history, mini medical history, and vitals. This is done to ensure that our blood supply is safe. This is where safe blood starts. We have to ensure that the blood donation would not prove harmful to either the donor or the recipient. That's the person who's receiving the blood. So we use this in this questionnaire form as a measuring tool to detect any underlying illnesses which the prospective donor might have, and to make sure that there is nothing which can be passed on to the person who's receiving the blood. You're asked questions about your medical history, any existing illnesses, infections, travel history, where you could probably contract something like malaria, your contact with persons who may have diseases such as hepatitis, close contact with them, or you might just have a simple infection, cold or flu. Those would disqualify you from donating at that time. This is called the temporary deferral, but you would be eligible sometime in the future to donate blood. Things like tattoos, piercings, under a year, we don't accept you as a blood donor. Once this interview is completed, we do a finger prick on your thumb, which we take a sample of blood in a capillary tube. And this is done to assess your red cell count. We have to make sure that your red cell count is at a level, adequate level, that would not pose a problem for you during the blood donation. We also ensure that you've had sufficient fluids and something, a proper meal, I should say, nothing too heavy, but a low fat there usually, that you will, this would help to prevent any adverse reactions during the donation as well. Following that, you go into the donor room where your vitals are done, your blood pressure, pulse, and temperature. These again are to ensure that you're safe with blood donation. We don't want the blood pressure that's too high. We don't want it too low. You need to have your temperature within normal range so that you may not be having some type of infection. And we have your pulse rate within a reasonable range as well. Once this is ideal, we proceed to the actual blood donation where the area is cleansed. We select your vein, and the bag holds approximately 450 mils of blood, which might sound like a lot, but it's not actually that much.
Right, because that's roughly two of those box juices, under two boxes.
That's under that, yeah. And this process takes about 5 to 10 minutes, between 5 and 10 minutes. Once that's completed, we take a sample of blood, which we use for testing for diseases which are transmitted via the blood, mainly hepatitis, HIV, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, HIV, and syphilis. After that is completed, you're allowed to rest at least for a minimum of 10 minutes. You're given refreshments, some juice and some cookies, or whatever there is. And once you're in fine condition, your blood pressure is rechecked before you leave to ensure that it has not dropped too low. We make sure that we send you out comfortably.
So we will walk listeners through a summarized process towards the end, but apparently we have our first call in the studio over there, Gredston.
Caller, good evening.
Right, let's take that call. Good.
Peace to each and everyone. A wonderful evening again. Educational as always. I give blood twice, but for myself, because I am a sickler. And somehow I too, no religious thing, but I don't feel that. Lord, let it not be. I never had to take blood. But somehow for me, I'm not telling nobody what to do. But I want to know if you all have something, if people don't want blood, if there's something in this country that you could give in thing for blood. It's the blood itself. There's not something else that you can give.
Right, so we will discuss that a little later on in the program, but we're just trying to lay the foundation so persons can understand the process and understand what goes into collecting blood.
Okay.
So continue listening.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Doc, carry
we're
on.
Free and clear? Okay. So, Dr. Laurent, so our show 2 weeks ago, we had a wonderful show planned and lined out, very organized and meticulous, and it did not come to fruition. Dr. Laurent was very gracious, answering all the questions that persons posed on all the different aspects of hematology, except what we wanted to discuss. So my first question to you this evening was something that Ms. Seeley touched a little bit on, which would be things that could possibly defer you or stop. I'm laughing because I just got the signal that there's another call on the line. So before I give you my question and you start your discussion, let's take that call and then we'll ask you your question.
Caller, good evening.
Hi, good evening. How old should you be? And how old should you be? And what is the extended time? Like beginning?
And well, she's asking the age range. How young, how old? Miss Seeley?
Yeah, currently between 17 and 70. We stop at 70.
If you're 70 and in still good health, can you still give?
Pardon me?
If you're 70 and you're still a healthy person.
If you're healthy, yeah, well, that will be your end point, though. So if that's the first, it will be your first and last.
So there we have it, caller. 17, age 17, and
70.
Age 70. Miss Seeley, for those persons who are 17, since according to the law they are minors, must they be accompanied by an adult?
They just walk in, actually.
So why is the limit 70? If you are in good health and you could still donate blood, then why not?
The exception to that currently would be those persons who are giving blood for themselves, which we call the autologous donation. If they're having planned surgery, elective surgery, or whatever, the doctor will give them a letter stating that they are in fit condition, physical, good health, and they are eligible to give the blood, which is kept specifically for themselves. It's labeled and kept for them. That's our requirement for now.
Okay.
And so just another note, but giving blood is not the only thing that has an age limit on it. If we think about different screening tests, such as mammograms, if we think about things like your driver's license and so on, once you reach a certain age, you have to get a physical exam every year. So there are several other conditions and several other things, can't find another word right now, that require that with a certain age, certain restrictions are placed. So it's not exclusive to giving blood.
So my reason for asking that is because I know some people don't like to give blood, but if you are a blood donor and it finished at age 70 and you're still in good health, I wonder why you cannot still give.
Well, it's a reasonable question. You have to, Dr. Laurent, unmute your mic there.
According to the World Health Organization and the Pan American Health Organization, the guidelines state that up to age 70.
Okay.
Previously, we had it for individuals who were younger, and it has recently been extended to 70. So at present, 70 is the upper limit if one has been a regular donor and one wants to continue to donate, 70 is the maximum. As Ms. Seeley said, if you are an individual and you have a surgery plan that is elective, you can donate blood for yourself once the relevant preparations have been made. But okay. 70 is currently recognized regionally and internationally.
Okay, thank you very much.
And that was a very good question, caller. Thank you so much for calling in. So my question to you, Dr. Laurent, was an extension of what Ms. Seeley was talking about, which are those things which would cause a person not to be able to donate blood. For example, I know many people in our society are diabetic and hypertensive, and the question might be, if I have these conditions, am I still able to donate blood? And if so, are there any particular restrictions?
Persons who have diabetes can donate blood once they are not on insulin. Once they're well controlled on their tablets, by mouth, they can donate, as long as they're not diabetics who are on insulin. Persons who are hypertensive, they can also donate blood once they are well-controlled hypertensive. So when you ask someone to donate, that's the first thing someone will say, I'm a diabetic, I'm a hypertensive, I have hypertension. These in and of themselves are not contraindications for donation, with what I previously said.
Let's talk a little bit then about medications, for example. Are there any particular drugs that persons might be on that might disqualify them from donating blood?
Well, of course, persons who are taking their certain medications that might be considered toxic to somebody else versus what the patient themselves is taking. So there's a particular medication that sometimes is used in certain skin conditions called retinoic acid. We usually recommend that those persons should not donate. And of course, even we have had cases of persons who are currently on tablets. They would have been treated for, let's say, a malignancy, they're in remission, but they're still on extended treatment. They have come forward. Those persons are not persons that we would include. And you really have to go through the medication, you know, bit by bit to see exactly what medication the person is on. But one off the top of my head is retinoic acid. Persons who are on medications, of course, if you have a history of a seizure episode, then you would not be a candidate by virtue of your diagnosis and by virtue of the medication that you're on. You would not be a candidate for donation. And as I mentioned, insulin, you'd not be a candidate for donation.
And one more topical issue before we take our next call. We know that in our society, and we had this recent discussion about quantities of marijuana and whether persons can be seen with a certain amount and so on, and the consequences for carrying marijuana. What about the use of marijuana and the ability to donate?
Well, that in and of itself, again, it's a recreational drug. Despite, I don't think our regulations have changed regarding usage of marijuana, but once you are an active user of marijuana, you would be deferred from donating. And I think that's one of the challenges we currently have with individuals going to donate. Somebody might ask them to donate, and when they go into the interview, then they mention that, and of course, hence they're deferred. So marijuana usage is a contraindication. But when you think about it, when you think of contraindications, normally sometimes you focus on the therapeutics, the recognized medication, but definitely marijuana. And of course, although cocaine is not such a high usage of recreational drug in our community, but of course, if you're taking that, you should not even come forward to donate blood. Recently, I think I've also heard mention of ecstasy, which I think slowly is making its way into our part of the region. So the person, when they go into the interview, when they ask you what are you taking, what medications you're taking, or the interview should also include questions like, are you taking anything else? And the interviewer should be specific in saying, marijuana, cocaine, ecstasy. You know, we have to become broad because persons are going to say, no, I'm not on any medication, meaning the typical medication for chronic diseases. But you have to have an extended questionnaire in a sense to ask all of these questions.
Okay, before we go back to Ms. Seeley, let's take that call.
Hi, good night.
Hi, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good night, doctor. Good night to the guests. Good night, Grayston. I have three questions. I want to know what angle the needle should be formed to take blood. That's number one. Number two, what are the three main veins to draw blood? And my third question, how do you collect blood sample from me? Those are my three questions. I'll put down a listen.
All right, caller. Thank you kindly. Dot, we've got the questions noted.
Yes, and I see my pen is here in my hand. Yes. I've learned from previous experience.
Very good, very good. All right.
So we go over to Ms. Seeley for the technical aspects of this question. At what angle should the needle be placed in an effort to ascertain the best blood sample?
Remember, we're not talking about blood samples. There's a difference between the blood sample and taking a unit of blood.
Okay, Miss Seeley, well, go ahead for our listeners and make that distinction.
Will depend on the position of the vein. Her second question was
one of the three main things.
Well, just elaborating on the first question about the angle. For those of you who have donated blood, remember that the best veins usually for good blood donors are located in the region of the elbow. So, Miss Seeley, I'm correct in saying that when you approach the vein, you approach the vein head on. You see a nice fat vein, you clean the area nicely, you pump it up, and you go straight in. Click, clack, and you're in, right?
Yes, that's it. Some persons, why realize who come to us say, that, oh, but we don't have any veins that really don't you to take blood from the wrist. Mm-hmm. That's okay for persons who are giving blood samples, but that's not adequate for the actual blood donation.
Right, and her third question was...
You did the second one?
It was the angle. Oh, the three main veins. So that's a little bit of. And we're not trying to shy away from the questions, but it doesn't make a difference if it's the basilic vein, if it's something in the antecubital fossa, cephalic vein, whatever it is, femoral vein, which is in the leg, by the way. But my point is, my point is. We, like Dr. Laurent said, we look for the best vein that the individual has, and we angle the needle not perpendicular because we're not into stabbing anybody, right? In an effort to give us access, and everybody's different. Everybody's arm is different, and everybody's vein is located in the same general area, but not specifically. And not everybody that goes to donate can donate.
Yeah.
What was the third question again?
What was the third one?
But I was just asking you.
something about sample. Something about the sample.
Oh, yes. How do you collect the sample?
Right. In terms of the donation process, as Ms. Seeley would have mentioned in her initial summary, when you go to donate, you take a unit of blood is taken, which is about 450 mils, which is roughly about 2 cups, equivalent of 2 cups. And then from that unit of blood, then a small sample is taken and that is sent for testing for the various infections that can be transmitted through blood transfusion. But the main sample is the 450 mils, which is taken when the needle is in and you're pumping and that blood is flowing into the bag, which is lying on a shaker system.
All right, Doc, I beg your pardon if you're continuing that discussion. I beg your pardon, but when you're finished, there's another call for you.
Okay, I wanted to move on to ask Ms. Seeley, what then happens? You've collected your 450 mils of blood, and like Dr. Ron has said, it's on a shaker system because blood that stays still is prone to clotting. And I believe that in the bag, there is a special anticoagulant or a special drug to stop the blood from clotting.
A blood thinner
to stop the blood from clotting. So when you take the individual from, when you disconnect the needle from the individual, you seal your bag, what happens with that unit of blood?
Use what's called a stripper to strip, to mix the anticoagulant, which in the bag, we take the blood from the tubing and we strip it into the main bag so that we won't have any clots in that tube, because with that tube, I'm not good at angle at measurement, but the tube is divided into segments, which is used then in blood bank for grouping and cross matching the blood to make sure that it's compatible with whoever is receiving the blood. They seal those segments, and from there that goes over to the blood bank where other processing is done.
Okay, we'll take that call and we'll come back and ask you one more question as relates to transporting that blood over to a blood bank. Let's take the call, Gregston.
Good evening, caller.
Good evening.
Yes, please.
Hi, good evening. Go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I was wondering, because I heard a lady call who said she was a sickler. So I was wondering if you have to get the doctor's permission as a sickler to give blood. And if so, what level does your hemoglobin have to be above?
Actually, for that one, she had me a bit baffled because as a rule, we do not take blood from persons who are sicklers. So I'm not sure exactly what she had done.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
sicklers are not considered to be blood donors. They are not blood donors. By virtue of the fact that they have a blood disorder, they would not be accepted as blood donors.
Even if it was for her own
self? I heard that too. I'm already sure. Sorry?
Even if it was for her own self?
I didn't hear the question.
Even for her own self,
she's not big yet.
All right. Mm-hmm. The other question, I believe, was the what count, level, the blood count. I think that was the other question. How high the count has...
What we do with the PCV, what we call a packed cell volume, when we take that, our lower level for females, normally a 36%, and for males, 38%. But if the individual is donating for themselves, we go to a percentage of 33.
All right. I hope the caller heard that. Doc, we have another caller on the line.
All right. Let's ask that caller to hold. Let's get over this information from Ms. Seeley. Thank you, caller, for holding. Ms. Seeley, so what special precautions are taken or necessary for blood to be safely transported over to the hospital? That's where our blood bank is, over at the hospital.
If the blood is just, because we have different bags in which the blood will be taken, since you can use halfway the whole blood, or you can have plasma, or you can have platelets to be separated from that unit of blood. So if it's a matter of having platelets, that blood will not be refrigerated. So that will be transported within a matter of, let's say, 3 to 4 hours to the blood bank in hospital. If it is a unit of whole blood, which not to be separated, that we can retain that and refrigerate it for, let's say, a couple of hours until it's transported by hospital transportation in a cooler to the blood bank in hospital.
Okay, and we take this opportunity to say good evening to all those persons who are hard workers in the blood collecting center, as well as those technicians in the blood bank and general hematology. And we can't leave out chemistry and the other labs over at the hospital. All those ladies and gentlemen who really do work hard. We have, apart from chemistry, we have microbiology. We have,
psychology.
What, I'm missing
histology.
One.
Histology.
Yeah, missing histology, not intentionally. I was going through the lab in my mind. So good evening to all you ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. And
hematology, don't forget.
Hematology.
Okay.
Yes,
the hematology hematology technologists. The hematology technologists. Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful group of people there. You don't see them like generally out in the hospital, but they're working hard in the lab. So good evening to all of you. Let's take that call now, guys, then before we go on.
Good evening, caller.
This is me again. You all didn't understand what I said.
All right, clarify it for us then.
I'm the sickler and I donate blood for myself. Because as I say, I don't believe. I thought when a family come to give blood that you will get your family's blood. But then I learned then that sometimes the blood type don't be the same. So I don't believe in that. So when the doctor tell me I have to have surgery and to get blood, I donate my own blood. So I never said that I donate blood for people for myself. And I asked then if there is a substitute, then if you don't want blood that you can give you a substitute for the same blood. That's what I asked. And I give blood twice for myself.
All right. Thank you, Connie, for the clarification.
Thank
all right.
You.
You're welcome.
So my question, is that caller still online?
They're gone, Doc. They're gone.
Okay.
But I have another caller for you.
Okay.
Good evening. Go right ahead, please.
Hey, good evening. Can you give blood if you have a tattoo?
I think they addressed that earlier, but I'll let the good doctors...
I didn't hear that.
No, that's all right. They'll tell you again.
You're okay, I'll put down.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So the question is, can you give blood if you have a tattoo?
Yep. Yes. As mentioned before, tattoos, piercings, body piercings, tattoos, and acupuncture, those donors are deferred for a period of 1 year due to the fact of that there might be a possible contamination of hepatitis. So we allow that time period as a safe deferral time period. So tattoos, piercings, and acupuncture, those donors are deferred for a period of 1 year.
All right. Let's hope the caller heard that one. This query here, good night. If someone, I believe they mean is prone to blood clot, can they give blood? That's the question.
If the person is prone to blood clot, typically they would be on, well, it depends on where the blood clot was, that's one. Secondly, it would also depend on the duration of time that they are on the blood thinner. So if an individual is actively taking a blood thinner for their blood clot, no, they would not be a candidate for donation. So typically we would defer those persons because, as you can imagine, you're taking a blood thinner and that product is in your blood and is going to be passed on into your donor bag. And if, let's say, God forbid it were missed, then that would then be passed on to the donor. So no, someone who is on a blood thinner for a blood clot is not a candidate for donation.
All right. I hope the WhatsApper got that answer
for
as well.
Those of you, those of you who are just joining us, we just wanted to let listeners know that we're discussing parts of transfusion medicine. We're in with Dr. Theresa Laurent, consultant hematologist at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. And we're also speaking with Ms. Anderlene Seely. She is a senior blood collecting technician. And she works over there at the Blood Collecting Center in Lady Mead Gardens. And for those of you who don't know where Lady Mead Gardens is, it's right next to the Winston Scott Polyclinic.
And the reason why we're smiling, so, yes, that's the reason why we're smiling. So, caller, can you hear us?
Yes, good evening to the panel.
Yes, please, go right ahead.
Some person that has SLE can donate blood?
Repeat the question, please.
SLE.
No. Again, those individuals would not be candidates for donation.
All right, the person
because
is gone.
Because most times those persons would be on some form of medication for their disease process.
Okay, so we're hoping that the callers understand that during the questionnaire, these are the sorts of questions that are asked, and when you give answers to these questions, it's determined whether or not it's safe for you to donate. And we're considering the safety of the person who's donating, like Ms. Seely said, and we're also considering the individual who's going to be on the receiving end of that blood. And it's a very, very technical issue and very, very serious, because giving the wrong blood is life-threatening. And this is where we're going to, if you can see the expression on Dr. Laurent's face, they say, oh, yes, it is. Oh, yes, it is. So we're going to jump over now, give Miss Celia a chance to catch herself, and we're going to discuss a little bit about why we must be so specific about giving individuals the right blood.
Okay, so when someone donates blood, as Ms. Seely would have mentioned, that blood product is then taken over to the blood bank. The blood bank is located at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, and that is where the processing of the blood occurs. The first thing that has to be determined is the blood group of the donor, and also then the blood is also tested to make sure that there are no unusual antibodies present in the blood. And think of an antibody just as a protein that sometimes can be formed in the blood as a result of, in most women, as a result of pregnancy or sometimes for another underlying cause. So once that has been determined, then the next process, of course, is testing. The blood product also is then fully tested. Ms. Seely would have mentioned it's tested for HIV, hepatitis B and C, syphilis, and another important virus, the HTLV-1 and 2 virus. That is a virus that is essentially what we call endemic in the Caribbean region, and it's a virus that can cause serious consequences in terms of can cause leukemia, lymphomas in individuals, or it can cause diseases of the nerves. So it is tested for all of these all of these disease processes. If there is any hint of anything abnormal, then that donor blood is removed from the shelf. The testing is repeated again. In some instances, we also have secondary testing to ensure that the product that finally reaches the patient is free and clear of all infections. So once that has been done, the group is known, there's no antibodies present, the product is free and clear of any infections that may be transmitted via blood, then the next step is then taking that blood product and what we call cross-matching. Essentially, what we do is that we're mixing the cells. And if you would have remembered, we had a conversation in our last talk where I mentioned that when blood is donated, you see the red cell portion, and just above that, you also see this kind of lightish color fluid, which is called the plasma. So then there is sort of, for want of an easier way to explain it, mixing to ensure that the donor blood is compatible, that there are no issues with the patient who is going to receive the blood. Once that process is done, and again, once that process is free and clear, then that blood is then held in place for that patient until it is required. Of course, in an emergency setting, the blood is quickly issued. Most times the blood that is issued in an emergency setting is O negative blood. In an elective setting, the blood has to be properly cross-matched. And once everything is, you know, all the checks and balances are in place, then that blood is released from the blood bank to the patient.
So whilst we're on the issuing of blood, you mentioned just now the emergency setting and any blood that's issued in an emergency when you're not aware of the blood group and type of the recipient, the person who's getting blood, you give them O negative blood. So those persons are called the universal donors, somebody with an O negative blood type.
Right.
And so, on the other hand, go ahead.
So I'm just agreeing with you. Yes, O negative are the universal donors. You can give that blood to anybody.
And the universal recipient, those persons, their blood group would be?
The universal recipient, when we talk about universal recipient, anybody who can receive O negative blood is essentially, can be transfused with O negative blood. When we talk about, the terminology universal recipient, we talk about the AB positive group, but we talk about more of them more in terms of plasma.
Okay.
Right? They're the ones that their plasma can be essentially be donated to anybody.
Anybody.
Yeah.
So, Ms. Healy, in the blood bank, what groups are the most common ones? In, when you just run through it in your mind and from doing stats and so on, which are the ones which are most commonly donated and which ones are we in need of?
We go from O positive, A positive, B positive, AB positive. We're coming down in that order. And then you go O negative, A negative, B negative, AB negative. Usually the ones that we're most in need of would be the O positive, since that's the larger group. So let's say if there was an accident or whatsoever, you'd expect that more persons would be the O positive. So yeah, they would be the ones requiring the majority of blood.
Okay, let's take this. Sorry, go ahead, Dr. Laurent.
Yeah, and also ideally, we should always have a certain number of units of O negative blood on our shelves. Because as we mentioned, that this is the universal donor and anybody can get that product even without testing. So in an emergency setting, that's the blood that is issued until we can determine what the patient's blood group is. And then subsequent to that, we then give them their group specific blood. So we should always, in an ideal setting, we always require to have O negative blood in our blood bank so we can access it at any time. But as you know, the challenges.
Yes, our society really and truly, and it is an honest answer when people say, I don't want to donate because I'm afraid of needles. It really is a true answer. One of our earlier callers had mentioned the query about alternatives to receiving blood. Do we have on island any of those other non-human blood products?
Well, in most cases, what we essentially have is what we call erythrocyte-stimulating agents. So erythrocyte-stimulating agents, erythrocyte means red cells, stimulating agents, red cell stimulating agent. They are products, injections, that can be administered for some individuals. As we know, the Jehovah Witnesses do not do blood transfusion. So there's some products, and those two not made from any human plasma, which can be donated. However, unfortunately, these are not products that can be used in an emergency setting. So if it's an elective procedure, or let's say the person is anemic, has a chronic anemia, one can give them some of these injections. There are different dosing regimes. Persons who are on dialysis would know about them. The product is called erythropoietin stimulating agent, or the name for it is Recormin. There are different doses. It can be given twice a week. I think in dialysis, they give them twice a week. In our hematology setting, we actually give them three times a week. There's some dosing which can be given once a week. And that product in individuals in which it works can increase the red cell production for that individual, so that they do not have to use blood products. It's also an agent that's used in persons who are sicklers, who may have been transfused multiple times and eventually develop antibodies that makes it challenging for them to get blood products. We actually can use it in them if it works over a period of time to reduce their need for transfused blood. So we do have a couple of patients that we have used it on, where they have to take the injection weekly until it maintains their blood levels to a satisfactory level that can keep them reasonably healthy. So yes, we do have those products.
Oh, I thought, Grayson, I thought you were saying that we
No. I beg your pardon. That if it gave it an impression, though, I was speaking with the gentleman who was next to me, that you could see that the others can't, you see. So I do apologize
if it gave it an impression. I've gotten so accustomed when Dr. Laurent is here to getting so many different.
Yeah, there was somebody calling, but they hung up. So you can continue.
Okay. Let's go back over to Miss Seeley and ask, have there been any instances where persons were petrified of giving blood? And we're talking about real life situations, because you imagine that we're talking to the individuals who are curious about blood donation. They're not certain whether or not they would be a candidate. So have you had to manage any of those situations?
Seeley, if I had to manage one, not. Quite recently, the individual did not even receive the level stick on the thumb before they started perspiring and actually fainted.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh.
So, yes, yeah, some are really, really, really petrified of needles. And it.
Okay, perhaps we should issue a word of caution to those persons. Whilst your motives might be what we say altruistic or thinking about others other than yourself, if you know that you are petrified of needles and your heart starts to race and you break out in a sweat, giving blood might not be the best thing for you. We appreciate your heart, but perhaps that's not the best thing to do. So let's say, Miss Seeley, somebody hearing this conversation tonight understands that we are in a situation where we do need different types of blood, and they're interested in going over to the blood collecting center located there on Lady Mead Gardens. How do they do it?
Currently, since the beginning of the COVID epidemic, from March, actually, we have set up an appointment system so as to enhance that social distancing and follow protocol. So you can contact us if you want to make an appointment at 836-7993, and we will schedule an appointment for you. On the day that you're coming, we advise you to have, well, as I said before, a decent meal, and it's advisable to have some fluids which will help prevent adverse reactions. And that's about it.
Okay, so a healthy breakfast, nothing laden with fat. So we're not talking about fried eggs, four rashers of bacon and butter and bread. And then on top of that, some tea, laced with sugar. That would not be the ideal breakfast to go and donate blood. But we really are encouraging during this program persons to consider if it is not outside.
And just to mention the...
Go ahead.
Yeah, and just to mention about the fat laden breakfast, that's important because we have had cases of persons who would have thought that, okay, I have to eat a really heavy breakfast and filled with fat. And believe you me, the fat shows up in the bag. It is not a pleasant sight to see those rolls of fat in the blood bag. So no. Do not have a breakfast laden or whatever meal of the day just before your donation process. Avoid too much fatty products because it's going to show up in the blood product. And of course, unfortunately, we will not be able to use it.
All right. Let me just interrupt the good folk here. I've got three queries for you. First one, this says via WhatsApp, says, can the Rh positive give blood?
Well, Rh positive is just an antigen that's present in all blood groups except the Rh negative. So O positive, that would be O Rh positive, A Rh positive. Anybody can donate blood once, as we said, you're not petrified of needles, once you do not have any of the contraindications we would have spoken about previously, you can donate blood, because that's what we're really trying to educate persons on, the importance of donating blood, the importance of ensuring that we have a safe, healthy blood supply so that if anybody, we never know, needs blood, they can get it. So yes, Rh positives can donate blood. All and right. That would be O-A-B-A-B.
All right. The second question via WhatsApp says, good evening. Can you tell me what is the difference between O negative and O positive?
Okay. So O negative means there is no Rh antigen present on that blood. And the positive, those are the ones that have the Rh antigens present. So negative without, positive with.
All right. And the third query.
And O negative out there is the required, is the rare blood group. That is the universal donor, and that is the blood group sometimes we need to have on our shelves just as a precaution. But anybody, once you have no major contraindications, please come forward and be a blood donor.
Okay. Third query. Are blood donors given the results of the screening of their blood? And if so, when?
So once blood is donated and all the testing is done, if there is any abnormality within that blood, meaning there's any evidence of any infectious disease or any positive test for one of the infections, you do receive a notification. If you have not received anything, that means your blood is good. But once you receive a notification, then you are directed accordingly what to do. So you may receive a notification asking you to have a particular blood test repeated. Because in some instances, what may happen is that it is what we call an indeterminate result, meaning that the value is not significantly high enough to be positive, but is not low enough to be considered negative. And in a lot of instances, that may be what we call a false positive. So we actually ask individuals to go and repeat it. And in the majority of cases, it will come back negative. And when it does, then again, you receive a notification informing you that either it was negative or it was repeatedly positive. And then you are then directed, what would be your next process to take. But you do receive information only if there is some concerns.
All right. I hope that helped the concerned WhatsApper. I've got two others here. Blessings. Is there a substitute for blood transfusion instead of human blood? And can the doctor tell us the different types of blood? I believe that second part could have been answered already. But you, question is there a substitute for blood transfusion instead of human blood and different types of blood?
There are substitutes that are developed for blood transfusions. Those are usually given in military settings. So they're products, they're called blood substitutes, actually. Those can be given in emergency military setting. But there are other means of utilizing, again, if the person is not a Jehovah's Witness, there are other means of utilizing one's own blood to replace one lost blood. So sometimes actually in the operating theater, what is done is then the blood is first removed. The patient is then given IV fluids. And then post, based on what the procedure is, what the surgical procedure is, then this is then followed by replacement of the blood product that was initially removed. In some instances where there may be really serious emergencies and the person is actually bleeding profusely, there are actually means of collecting that blood that is lost, washing it, and also giving it back to the person right there in the operating theater. So there are various means available. Unfortunately, not all are available here, but we do have a few.
All right.
And also, there would have been a mention initially about autologous blood. In situations where individuals do not want to receive blood that is not of their own, what actually happens, and again, based on the underlying diagnosis, so that still that individual with the sickle cell disease who called initially, I suppose in another setting, one could ask more questions. But you do have situation where someone has to have a procedure and they say, I want to receive my own blood. That person is then prepared for surgery. They are given those red cell stimulating agents. They are given iron tablets, and then they have, just closer to surgery, they have their own blood removed and stored in preparation for surgery.
All right. This other query, can O positive blood be given to all persons?
No. Only O negative blood can be given to all persons.
All right. Short and sweet. Okay, Doc, carry on.
It's either yes or no. It's either yes or no for blood donation.
And that's, you know, a definite.
There's no mixing.
And it's a definite no on that one. Definite no on that one.
Definitely no. We are beginning to wind down on this very topical and interesting discussion on blood collecting. So we started with Miss Seeley. And Miss Seeley, I want you to give our listeners reasons you think that blood donation is something that they should become involved in, of their own will, of course, because remember, it's a voluntary process. What advice do you have for our listeners?
I would like to encourage every healthy individual between the ages mentioned previously, 17 to 70, to just donate and keep the blood bank in a good supply, so that in case of emergencies, we don't have to be pulling on people and begging persons and they getting the wrong type of blood, because they might be persons with infectious diseases. And it actually puts pressure and stress on individuals when they're asked to donate blood in such a situation. And they might actually tell a little white lie here and there, you know. They might not actually tell the truth, which I've had experienced that before, since because of pressure put on them by family members. If we can maintain that adequate supply there, we would go a long way towards assisting persons, especially in case of emergency. But if you don't have it in the bank, as they say, if you have to get money from the bank, you need to get money. You will have to borrow somebody else's money. And if nobody has put money there, then there's none for you to borrow. And in that same situation, if there's no blood in the bank, you can't have, there's none available for you. Although I have been pressured by persons saying, but I know when I got blood in there, I know you got blood in there. Don't tell me, yeah. And they're like, they actually want to fight, because I'm like, but how would you get blood there if you haven't put any, your family members haven't put any, and there are persons who actually donate blood and everything goes smoothly, and it would, do you mind becoming a blood donor? Only if it for me or my family. Suppose it happens, if you have 12 donors, you and your family, nobody can give. What happens? Just like to encourage you to become donors and regular donors every 3 months.
Every 3 months, because that was going to be my next question. And to you, Dr. Laurent, Ms. Seeley hinted at it just now, before we take our last caller. Please explain to our listeners why it is that even although persons are related, that you cannot necessarily get your family's blood, because that has been a source of contention from time immemorial.
Okay. Most importantly, we would have spoken earlier on about blood groups. So although you're within the same family, you may not necessarily be of the same blood group. When someone goes to donate blood and they say that I'm going to donate blood for John Brown, it does not mean that John Brown is going to get your blood. That's one, because there may be different blood groups. That's one. Secondly, when they go to do the cross-matching process, there's no friendliness between the bloods, okay? So the bloods are not friendly. You know, people in Bajans know about friendly rice. Think of blood as friendly red cells. So if your red cells are not friendly, you cannot give John Brown, just because you went to donate for John Brown cannot receive your blood. The important thing, just think of a blood bank as a bank. Miss Seeley mentioned that. If there is no money in the bank, how can you get a loan? If you don't have good credit, how can you get a loan? How can you get a mortgage? A blood bank is the same. It works on the same premise. There is no credit. There is no money in the bank. You are not going to be able to get blood. A lot of the individuals who donate blood and who are regular volunteer donors those persons are doing a service to the community. They are not doing it. A lot of them don't do it because a relative wants it. They just go every 3 months. It's usually actually 56 to every 3 months. They go and donate blood, and they just leave their blood there, and whoever wants to use it can use it. So you don't have to have an individual who requires blood for you to be a blood donor. It is just when we have made decisions to do good to the community that we live in, the community that has contributed to us for whatever reason, through education, through the persons that we live in community with, blood donation is simply that, giving back to your community. You don't have to give to get. However, one never knows when one is going to require. You never know when you're going to need it. So what we are trying to get persons to understand is that we want to ensure that we have a good, healthy supply of blood. There will be instances where we'll have major emergencies that we need to call out donors, but we don't want to be doing that on a regular basis. What we want is to have a healthy supply, that John Brown goes and he needs surgery, or she's having a baby, the doctors can call her and say, hey, I need 2 units for Mary, or I need 2 units for John, and we can get that blood. But we are constantly having to bring persons in what we call replacement donors. What we want are voluntary donors. Voluntary donors are healthy. They lead fairly healthy lifestyles. We do not have issues with their blood. And they give every 3 months. And those persons, essentially they're the bedrock of our blood bank. And that's what we'd like to encourage more and more persons to try to do, so that we can have a fairly healthy blood supply. That's what we really want.
All right, Doc. I know we've gone over time just a wee bit, but I've got a call on the line, and I've got a query via the WhatsApp. Those, I promise, will be the last two. So let's see if the caller is still there. Good evening.
Sure. Yes. Good evening, sir.
Yes. Quickly, you can address the doc. They can hear you.
Yeah. Good evening, doctors. I would like to know if the lady there, Miss Seeley, if her correct title, job title, is not a phlebotomist. That is one. The second is, just to let you answer my question just now in a way by saying that when you give blood, that's just replacement blood for blood that is used or is being used. The third thing is it not, wouldn't it be a good thing for the government to look at giving people some kind of incentive to give blood? Like, if you give blood, you get $25 or $30. And the last question is this. If the people in the lab find that somebody donate blood and the blood is not good, and there's something really seriously wrong with the blood, would the people in the lab or the hospital, whoever, call in that person and explain to them that they have found something in the blood and they want to work with them to rectify that problem? Is that what happens, or they just let the person go before letting them know that there's something wrong with the blood?
Okay, so can I answer the last question?
Yeah.
If someone donates blood and we have found that there is, and it's not something wrong, it's usually there's an infection identified. In a lot of instances, as we would have spoken about earlier, it may be what we call a false positive. However, that individual is asked to repeat. They receive a letter and they're asked to repeat the test.
Okay.
In some instances, the result may be so significantly high that is unlikely to be a false positive. That right. person then receives a letter that directs them to one or two specialties. Sometimes they may either have to come over to hematology clinic, they may either have to go over to the gastroenterology clinic, or in some instances, we give them a letter directing them to go to their general practitioners to get the relevant treatment. So the persons are not left high and dry. Okay. There is a process. There's what we call recall, notification, they are informed.
Right.
Okay, I don't remember the other question.
The other question. Ms. Healy's correct title?
correct title is Senior Blood Collecting Technician. A phlebotomist basically can take samples of blood. In my position, what we do as blood collecting technicians, we do more than taking samples and taking blood. We have to interview that person. We have to do counseling. There are other aspects involved. So we cannot be classified as just phlebotomists.
There was another question, caller.
And if there's an emergency at the time, persons like Miss Seeley have to manage the immediate emergency until someone else comes along to assess.
Rexon,
so she's more phlebotomist.
The last question was relating to money. Well, it has been previously in other places. Incentives were given, monetary incentives were given. That has been discouraged because surely I would just say you get the wrong type of blood, because to get the money, persons are going to come and they're not going to be telling you the truth. And you will get blood that has infectious diseases, which you don't necessarily need to collect. And additionally to that, persons will be coming more frequently, despite the fact that we have a time limit between donations. So this method has been discouraged. Nothing monetary.
Okay, caller. Discontinued, not discouraged.
Okay, caller, you're satisfied with those responses?
Yeah, but I just want to tell Ms. Tilly that in America, you can go and donate blood. I know poor people in the States go and donate blood when they want money to buy food. I know that for a fact. That happens in America. I just thought
No. They do not go to donate blood. They go to donate plasma. Persons who go to donate plasma, which is the straw-colored product that's present in a bag of blood, it's extracted, the red cells are removed, plasma there. Those persons can be paid for plasma.
Yeah, but what?
Right? But not blood. Red blood cells are not, one is not paid for red blood cell donation.
Doctor, whatever it is, they are paid. And I was just wondering if it would not help our system by asking people to come and give blood and then give them some kind of incentive to encourage them to do that. Because sometimes it has really hurt my heart. I am on warfarin and I can't give blood. No. But sometimes it really hurt my heart to hear the hospital got to be begging people to come and give blood. And people say, I ain't getting the blood. But you know what? Sometimes same people might want blood one of these days. Anyway, thanks for
hearing. Yes, caller. Thank you kindly, because we're past our time. But we thank you for your contribution. And the good doctor, before you run away, I'm not sure if I missed anything in relation to weight. So says this WhatsApp. I think that I recently heard something on the radio about a minimum weight of 100 pounds. Is this so?
110 pounds.
Yeah.
So anything
100.
Under 110 pounds. Right. So you must be over 110 pounds. So to that WhatsApp, that answers your question. It's not 100. It's anything over 110 pounds, you're okay in terms of weight.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. All right, Doc.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, thank you, ladies. Thank you so very much for giving up your time as usual. I know that we are out of time. So we are going to say have a pleasant evening, everyone. And one more piece of encouragement for those of you who don't have any reason, please donate. Ms. Seeley, can we have that number again to set up the appointments?
836-7993.
Okay, 836-7993. Thank you so very much. Gregston, have a wonderful, wonderful week up ahead, everybody.
Yes, thank you kindly to Dr. Laurent. And Seeley, I just had to comment on this.
Oh, really?
What a wonderful name you have, ma'am.
Yes, seriously. Isn't it?
Thank you so kindly for being part of the show, Dr. Laurent and Mrs. Seeley, and of course, Dr. Boyce, your host as usual. And as we're finishing, Doc, the people are still WhatsApping, but we would encourage you to do it as soon as you possibly can, because in the home stretch, the doctor has to wrap up and then the guests have to give their opinions on some stuff they've said before. You know, so it would be difficult to get to you, all of you, at the same time during the last few moments. But sooner the show, the better. As long as the good doctor permits, we will take your queries and your questions and also your calls. And they're still pouring in now, but we'll have to leave that to another time because we're way past our time at 10 minutes past pass.
So apologies, Cheryl.
Don't worry, she'll take it out. She'll take it back. And she'll probably have my head for it too. But anyway, thank you, Dr. Boyce. Thank you, Dr. Lauren. And Celie, you have a wonderful night. And we will catch you next Sunday at 6 for another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. Thank you all.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye.